if you're a good steward over what you've been given, then you will be given more. I believe that time, although it is a finite resource, if we are good stewards of our time, we can be given more of it.
You are listening to the Luminary Business Podcast, the podcast where passionate entrepreneurs and executives just like you discover how to become more prominent and influential and build a profitable business that truly matters. Join me, Todd Staples, as I unlock the foundational skills, habits, and mindset needed to produce optimal personal and business results. All right, Tyler, how are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to dive into this one. This is actually my favorite part of the show because the first part, we get to talk about business and how you've achieved the success you have. But now I get to really get into your head and figure out what are those critical strategies that you have used and the perspective you have on life in general that has allowed you to be really successful. And I like to start it with this. There's a quote that I love by an author named Shiv Khera, and the book that he wrote is called The Winner's Edge. And he says that winners don't do different things, they do things differently. So in that spirit, I'm really interested to figure out what you do differently. Like, everyone works on marketing, everyone tries to grow their business, but there must be something that you do differently in your life and in your business that produces more success than the average Joe. So if you could, can you walk me through just sort of what's a typical day like for you? And I want to really step into the shoes of you and what it's like to go through a typical day.
Sure. So I read a book a while back, which you probably heard of, The Miracle Morning.
I have not been
a perfect implementer of the ideas in that book, but I've almost always in my life followed something similar where the morning of my day is really important, and I spend time in a structured way doing certain things in the morning. So I wake up most mornings between 4:30 and 5.
Woo! You got me beat. I thought I was early. I'm a 5:45 riser.
There you go. Hey, everyone's got their own schedule. So part of the reason I get up early is because I have to take my son to a seminary class before school. So anyways, I get up and the first thing I do is I read scriptures. So I read from the Bible or other good books to get myself centered and allow that spirit and that power to infiltrate my life. I read for 15, 20 minutes or so. And then I'll spend some time praying, oftentimes praying about challenges that I'm facing or praying for my children or my wife or our employees, business, for our clients, whatever it might be, different things going on in life. And then I try and squeeze in a little exercise. So, it might just be a few quick sets of push-ups. It might be that I've got a little bit more time. I hop on my bike and go for a bike ride or go for a run. But I like to get in some type of quick exercise. I find that that helps clear my mind as well as, of course, the health benefits. Then I get ready for the day. I take my son to seminary, and then I come straight to the office. So I get to the office usually between 6:30 and 6:45, and that gives me an hour and a half or so just by myself to either get caught up on things, to organize my day, to think bigger about the business, make bigger plans, and think about some of the big challenges that we might be facing and things like that before everyone else gets to the office.
So curious. I just want to interrupt real quick because I'm so curious for people listening. I would love it for you to put comments in the podcast notes here about what time you get up. I wonder how many people jaw hit the floor when you said 4:30 to 5 o'clock, because I do, I talk to and interview a lot of successful people, and more often than not, it's not always, but more often than not, the people that I see as having real success and freedom in their lives get up incredibly early. So there's got to be something to it. And if you're getting to the office by 6:30 and you've already gone through your exercise, prayed, read some inspirational material, taking care of your family, like you certainly have a jump start of people who are waking up at 7, that's for sure.
This might sound a little odd, might sound a little out there.
But, I like it. Bring it.
But I really believe it's true. So if you're a person who's read the Bible, even if you're not, you may have heard this. So there's the parable of the talents that Jesus teaches. He teaches these people that there was one man that was given one talent, and talent was actually a coin back in those days. So one man that was given 5 talents, another man that was given 10 talents. And the master who gave them to them left them with those talents and then came back at some point in the future and asked them to give an accounting of their talents. The guy who had the one buried it because he was afraid of his master and he didn't want to get in trouble. He didn't want to lose it. And the other two guys basically invested their talents and doubled them. And so he took the talent that the guy hid, took it away from him, and gave it to the guys who were making more. It's obviously an illustration of, you know, if you're a good steward over what you've been given, then you will be given more, right? Now, I believe, and I truly, truly believe this on two different levels, but I believe that time, although it is a finite resource, mm-hmm. if we are good stewards of our time, we can be given more of it.
Now, no kidding. I've never heard this. I've known that you have had, you know, a strong religious backing to, you know, how you live your life. But I love this story. It's fascinating. So
like I said, it's really out there, and it's even out there for me. Like, how can you get more of a finite resource, right? Yep. And I don't know if it's that if you're a good steward of it, you're then able to manage it better, therefore it feels like you have more of it, or if there's somehow more of it given. But I know that when I plan better and when I do good things with my time and I focus on what is the, you know, prioritizing and serving other people with my time, it always feels like I have more time to do more of that stuff. As soon as I get lazy, say I sit around and watch TV for a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden the next day I wake up and I feel scrambled. Like, what the heck? I don't have enough time. I got way too much on my plate. How am I going to do it all?
You know, I really like that perspective. It reminds me of I have a similar perspective to the law of attraction. I don't entirely believe in the law of attraction. I think it's much more focused. It's attention, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what you pay attention to doesn't necessarily suddenly appear magically in your life. You're better at recognizing it. So yeah. If you're looking for opportunity or if you're looking for ways to manage your time, it might not be that they suddenly just manifest, but you're so much more open to receiving them, and you notice things that you wouldn't have noticed before if you didn't have your attention placed on that thing.
Yeah, and really, for me, all it takes is just a little bit of planning each day, right? Looking at the day, mm-hmm. and literally when I'm doing this well, I'll book out pretty much every minute of my day. And it's the things like, you know.
Do you do that in the morning or the day before?
Yeah, in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'll do it in the morning. And it's things like the 15-minute drive home. You know, I'm often listening to personal growth type material. But also, like, if I'm praying in the morning about a particular person, I might realize, hey, you know what? I need to call that person. And so during my drive home, I'll book that into my calendar with a little alert on my phone. So I get in my car, I'm driving, all of a sudden, boom, alert pops up. Oh yeah, I need to call so-and-so. And so it's all those things that, like, we want to do. I've never talked to someone who's like, yeah, I'm a bad person, right? We're all good people. We all want to do good things. Everyone wants to be a better friend. Everyone wants to be a better family member. Everyone wants to be a better business owner, a better employer, et cetera. And you might think of things that you can do to be better in those areas. But implementation is always where the rubber meets the road, right? Like, do we actually do it?
Yeah. And taking action.
I find that I don't do it unless it's in my calendar. If I put it in my calendar, it happens. And just boom, 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 just crank through the day, do everything on my calendar, we're good to go.
Yeah. How do you decide what to put in there? So you get to work in the morning. Do you have, you know, a big to-do list that you select from? Do you stay focused on a very, you know, long-term overriding goal? How do you decide what you're doing with your day?
Yeah, good question. So the goals are important. You know, at Box Out Marketing, we have our mission, which is a 3-year mission. And that is to help 10,000 small businesses get results from marketing automation. That is our driving force. That's where we're headed. That's the direction we're going. But then we break that down each year and each quarter into smaller goals and things that we need to get done. So when I'm looking at our business, that's how I prioritize. You know, what are the things that I need to do to get us closer to that goal? What are the things that need to happen today? You can always plan out into the future, but today is really what matters. Because if I don't get done what needs to happen today, the stuff that I'm planning out in the future isn't going to matter anyways. So what actually has to happen today is the stuff that gets on my calendar. And then if I'm working on a client project or something like that, same thing. You know, what has to happen today to get us to the next step? And then anything that that comes into my mind about, you know, helping other people, like I was mentioning earlier, like calling someone on the way home from work or something like that, that I just, it has to go in the calendar. I feel like that stuff is, you know, inspiration from God, like telling me like, look, you need to call so and so, or you need to go visit so and so, or whatever. And so there's no negotiation on that stuff. It's like it just has to go on there, and I have to figure out a way for it to fit.
And you know what's a great thing about when you get it out of your head and onto the calendar, it frees up headspace.
Yeah,
totally. Right. I think it's you know, part of the getting things done GTD system is get everything out of your head. Because if you don't, it's stuck up there, you know, and you can't think clearly. You know, another thing I want to tell you about, I don't know if you've seen this, but for you and also people listening, have you seen the Self Journal?
I haven't.
It's awesome. I've got it right here next to me, actually. It was a incredibly successful Kickstarter campaign. If I recall, they made like $300,000 in their Kickstarter launch. It's just a daily planner, but the way that they do it is really well thought out and structured. It's got a 13-week plan, and then they break that down to your top three goals for the month, and then those you break into daily chunks and targets. And in the morning, you write what you're grateful for. So very similar to what, you know, you being reading scriptures and being thankful and praying. You talk about what you're grateful for. You talk about your three top targets for the day. You record your wins. So you actually have a little celebration every time you win. You also record your lessons, and then you do a three more things you're grateful for at night. So cool. If you haven't read that, I'll put a link to that in the show notes too, but it's a really great journal. I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome.
So let's see, we talked about your time, your energy. We talked more about your time. What about your energy throughout the day? If you're getting up at 4:30, do you crash at 2 o'clock, or how do you manage your day? Are you taking a nap at noon? What do you do?
I generally don't take a nap, but I'm not opposed to it. There's certainly been days where I'm just, you know, feeling tired, and I realize that my head's not in it, and yeah, I'll kick back and just fall asleep in my chair, you know, for 15 minutes or so. It's funny, I read something a while ago. It was talking about like the optimal time for a power nap, and it was like 13 to 15 minutes. It was something about like once you get past 20 or 30 minutes or so, you start to go into like that deep REM sleep, and if you do and then you wake up, you feel groggy. Like you're coming out of like the middle of that cycle. But if you stop it earlier, then you're not quite all the way in it, but you still wake up a little bit refreshed. So I thought that was interesting because I've tried different, you know, lengths of naps, and definitely like that 15-minute time period is best for me. But anyways, I don't do that often. I really believe that our bodies are capable of much more than we typically allow them. I think we're capable on operating on far less food than we eat and far less sleep than we think we need. And that doesn't apply to everybody, but you know, I probably average, you know, 5 to 6 hours a night, and I'm fine. During the week, I crank on that speed just fine. On the weekends, I'll sleep in just a little bit. I might get 7 or 8 hours, you know, on a Saturday to Sunday morning. Friday night, I never get much sleep because the boys want to go surfing early on Saturday morning. So we still get up at 4:30 or 5.
No sleeping in for parents.
No,
I know that now too.
So, yeah, like one night a week, I'll get 7 or 8 hours of sleep, and it works out fine. So, again, I find that as long as I'm busy, as long as I got stuff on my plate, I don't feel tired. It's those moments that you stop for a sec and you got like nothing to do, and you know, you're feeling lazy or whatever. Yeah, you let yourself be tired, but I'm not tired if I'm working.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I was just going to point out, I think it makes a huge difference if you love what you do, and clearly you do. You know, I see you in person when you're working with people, you're lit up, and it's, you know, it's exciting when you're doing what you love. So that certainly helps. What have been the critical few things that you think have had the biggest impact on your success?
Biggest impact on success? Wow, that's a big question. There's a lot that goes into that.
It could be habits. It could be what you're talking about right now. It could be getting up early. It could be perspective. It could be things you've learned from other people.
Sure. I mean, probably the most influential thing, and anyone would say this probably, but most influential thing would be the way that I was raised. You know, our dad in particular was very focused on hard work and teaching us to work hard. But one thing that he did that I've always reflected on is when he'd give us a job, you know, we had chores to do that we were never paid for, but every once in a while there's like a bigger job that had to get done, and he'd offer us money for it, right? But he would always say, look, here's the going rate. Say it's like $20 to finish this job. He says, look, if you finish it early and the quality is better than average, then I'll pay you $30. He was always incentivizing us to work faster, but not at the cost of, you know, quality.
So, faster and better.
Yeah. So he just kind of instilled that in us, you know, from a young age. That's the way that it always operated in our house. And so I think that played a big part in just teaching me to work hard and do a good job.
Yeah, I like that. And based on some of the things you learned like that, hard work, but faster and better, what do you think are the critical few activities that allow you to work faster and better, that actually get you the most leverage?
Well, that's a great question, because one of the things he didn't teach us, my dad's a photographer. He's a commercial photographer. Actually just closed
up his business. Doesn't he do automotive photography?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of one of his primary things over the years. His specialty is really like shiny reflective objects, which are really hard to light and shoot. But he became kind of one of the world experts in cars. But anyways, it's him and an assistant, other contractors. So it's generally pretty small business, not a large group of employees, whatever. And he did everything. And, he comes from a mining background, essentially. His family, Park City miners, right?
So no kidding.
All hard workers, hard physical labor is kind of the background of the family. I was never taught, and he was never taught, anything about getting other people to work, right? And leveraging a team and that kind of thing. So, that's one of the things that has allowed me to continue to grow, and continue to become more and more efficient, is really trying to learn how to be a leader and how to inspire a team and how to get a team working efficiently. Because obviously there's only so much I can do. And as we grow, it feels like less and less I can do, right? And less I should do, right? And so the more that I can train the team and delegate to them, the much better we are off down the road. We can grow much faster. We can get much more done. We can do a better job for our clients when stuff is not on my plate. And so that's actually a struggle for me, being the type of person that gets in and works hard, figures things out. I enjoy that process. Mm-hmm. And so I have to continually remind myself, hey, get out of this, delegate this, give it to someone else. I don't care if you like it. I don't care if you can do it better than them. You got to give it to someone else.
Yeah.
And so that's been something that I've been really focused on over the last few years. And definitely, when I invest more time on training and more time on delegating, the company moves forward in leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Do you train your in-person team, like just in your office there, or do you also have a virtual team?
We are striving to have all of our people here. We do have a couple of people that are virtual. But yeah, we do all of our training here in the office.
Got it. That's great. Yeah, I mean, that is a highly leveraged activity, because you get your team together, you train them once, and they are more efficient and effective moving forward for all time.
Yeah, one of the things we've been doing lately too is, in addition to doing the training, actually before we do the training, is documenting all the steps. So, we work with software. We do a lot of implementation of software and website stuff and things like that. And so my team and I, lately our whole thing is, anytime you do anything, document it. And so we have, essentially, it's like a little internal wiki. And in there, every process that we work on, we now document it. And then later we train the rest of the team on it. And then that way, any new member of the team can come in, go straight into what we call the box. The box contains all the training and all the processes and all well documented and things like that. So they can go right into the box, just follow the steps and get it done.
Yeah, and that's the hidden benefit of that for people listening, because I've gone through this before in my own business, is it's like you said, it's great for new hires. And if you're growing a business, you're going to have more turnover than you expect, in my experience. People come and go. If you do a fantastic job and you train them and you educate them, they're going to possibly move on to a bigger, better job or starting their own business, which is great. But another side benefit of creating those systems and documentations is it makes your company a lot more appealing if someone was ever to buy it. And I did sell an e-commerce company. And one of the reasons I got the price that I did is that a lot of the systems and procedures were well documented. So new people could come right in, pick up where my people left off, and it would save a lot of time and help it be more efficient and more profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. I know we're running short on time, but you mentioned hiring. Let me just make a couple comments on that. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've made some major mistakes in hiring, and I've done it really, really well. And I'm gonna tell you what I've learned.
Okay, good.
So I did something terrible a little while back, and it is really terrible. I hired a girl, and on her first day in the office, I fired her. And that is because when she walked in the door, I just knew in my gut it wasn't a fit. And we had hired her early. You know, we weren't quite ready for a full-time role there. But at the same time, we're looking forward, you know, looking into the future, going, okay, we need all this, blah, blah, blah. And so we made the hire. But why did it go wrong and why has it gone wrong in the past? Basically, we developed a hiring process where we do a screening interview, a phone screening interview. We do an in-person interview. Then we send them some tests, some skills tests that are designed specifically for the role. And then we do a final in-face interview. When we follow the process, we end up with great, great people, and they stay and they're dedicated to the cause. As soon as we step outside the process, because we're anxious and we need to hurry and we got to fill this role fast, every single time, that's what screws it up. But part of the process that's ultra, ultra important is aligning on culture and core values more so than skills. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I tell people in the first face-to-face interview is I tell them, hey, we're openly a faith-based organization. And I tell them that, and then I ask them, you know, how they feel about that. But what's interesting is I generally don't even need to ask them how they feel about it, because I can see it in their face the minute I say it. You know, and the thing is, I don't even have to make a decision on it. They will typically pull themselves out if they're not comfortable with it, or they'll typically, you know, move forward in the process if they are comfortable with it. But it's great because as soon as I say that, I'll hear people say, oh, that's such a relief. It's so great. I always feel uncomfortable in work situations when I can't talk about what's most important to me. And then other people, like, you just kind of see them, like, they kind of just pause for a sec. And then they'll go like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. I can deal with that, you know.
Like, so Tyler, I am so curious on this point, and I know we're tight on time. How much longer do you have?
I got a few minutes.
Okay, so I do not have a strong religious preference any direction. Right, I wasn't brought up very religious, but I'm fascinated by people who are, and I think there's great lessons, and I really like the morals and values that go along with faith-based businesses and, you know, just living. Now, how would you hire or fire me? I'm really curious. If I came in and you told me that, I would be very curious. I would want to learn more. I would be passionately interested about how that has affected your business, but I wouldn't really have the faith or religious background to necessarily fit into that. How would you look at someone like me in your organization?
Good question. So the follow-up question in the interview process, when we ask that question is, what does it mean to you to work with faith? And I'm not necessarily concerned about a deep abiding faith in God at that point. What I'm concerned about is when you're faced with a challenge and you're not sure how to overcome it, can you operate with faith? Can you move forward working hard knowing that somehow there's going to be a positive resolution to the challenge? And if I can gather that out of the conversation, then I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable moving forward. If the person doesn't respond well to that question, then I don't want them on the team. And it has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with, can you operate in a situation where you're unsure, where you're stepping into the darkness and you just got to keep moving forward? And every business owner has done that, has to do that. And if you want a team that's going to be able to grow through the challenges, you got to have team members that can do that too.
That leap of faith is critically important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a very interesting thing to have as part of your screening, your process there. I'm sure the people that you do bring on that are a fit stay for a long time.
Yeah, they do. It's been great.
That's fantastic. Well, I think I'm going to wrap it up here because, you know what? I do want to ask one last question. I think this brings some insight into who you are. This is an exercise that I do in a mastermind dinner group that I host called Luminary Dinners. And it's an exercise actually that I learned from Dave Logan, who's a friend of mine who wrote Tribal Leadership. Have you read that book?
I have it sitting in my stack right here, ready to read.
put it to the top. It's really good. It's a really good one. So anyways, this exercise is about identifying your great gift. And he defines your great gift as follow these three characteristics. So your great gift is something you cannot not do. Like, you're always doing this thing. Number two is it's something that gets you in trouble sometimes. And number three, it's something that's actually very hard for you to identify except for when it's absent. And that happens very rarely. So the example he uses to make this really concrete is he brings up the example of Batman, right? Batman is, you know, kind of quote unquote a superhero, but he's actually just a regular guy who's very passionate about fighting injustice, right? So his great gift One, he cannot not do it. If he sees the damsel in distress, no matter whether he's in costume or has his fancy Batmobile or his tools, he cannot not go rescue that person, right? Two, it definitely gets him into trouble sometimes, right? If he goes and tries to rescue this person and he doesn't have all his stuff, he gets caught, he gets in trouble, he gets beat up. And then the third thing is, very rarely, when Bruce Wayne turns into a slightly alcoholic, disagreeable bastard, you realize that you do not like him in that moment because he has lost his great gift, which is fighting for the underdog and upholding values of, you know, peace and protection and civility, I guess. So do you think that you have a great gift?
Absolutely. I think everyone does.
And what is yours?
So mine is mechanical and technical problem solving. It's one of those things that's very interesting because to me, I know it's a gift because I can't explain how it happens. And where I really, really started to understand that this was a gift was when I was at Infusionsoft, because to me, it's just normal. At Infusionsoft, we'd be sitting in meetings and someone would, you know, pose a question, hey, Infusionsoft can't do X, Y, Z. You know, can we have the developers create this new feature? And anytime there was a question posed like that or a comment made like that, Jeff Mask, who you also know, would start counting. And he told me later that he would do this silently for a long time. And then it became a joke to him. So he'd start doing it out loud. He would start counting. And basically what he's counting is like, how many seconds does it take until I respond and say, oh, actually, you can do it. Here's the solution, right? And, you know, it's interesting because I don't take any credit for it. It's not something that I have tried to develop or that I worked on or whatever. It's just the way my mind operates. Whenever there's a problem posed, it just figures out a solution. It just, the solution just shows up.
You can't not do it.
I can't not do it. The solution just appears in my mind. And that's what obviously has allowed me to be good at Infusionsoft and become well known for Infusionsoft and all that kind of stuff. But as soon as he kind of pointed it out to me, I began to realize, yeah, it's really this gift, because I just figured, hey, that's just normal. Like, you think about the problem and you get the solution, right? But then he started pointing out to me that, hey, no one else comes up with a solution. Like, this is unique to you. Mm-hmm. And unique the way you come up with it. And so it's also a gift, though, that does get me in trouble, particularly as a leader of a company. Like I said earlier, I am working on delegating more and I enjoy the problem solving process at a very deep level. And so whenever a problem comes up, I like to get dirty. I like to get in the weeds and figure it out. That's an enjoyable process for me, and I need to, do it because we got to leverage the time and effort of our employees, and my time shouldn't be spent in those things unless, you know, it's a critical issue. And then the other thing is, if I always solve the problems, then it doesn't allow employees an opportunity to learn and grow. And that's a real problem. If you've ever read the book, Multipliers, I by nature, it's a fascinating book. You should read it. I by nature am what he calls in the book, or she calls in the book, an accidental diminisher. I diminish people around me accidentally because I like to get in the weeds and solve the problems for them.
Take the opportunity away from them.
Exactly. Instead of allowing them the opportunity to go through the process and learn and grow from it. And it's not an intentional thing. I don't want to hurt them, and it's not purposeful. It's just because that's where my gift is. That's where my nature is. I want to go there and do it. Plus, I'm like a very service oriented person. And so like, part of you feels like, oh, I'm serving them. I'm helping them get there faster. Right.
Yep.
But it actually has the opposite effect. So I focus on that a lot these days. So instead of solving the problem, I ask questions. Well, what do you think? How would you solve it?
That's good. Yeah. That's actually a really good strategy, is figure out what your great, great gift is and where it gets you in trouble. And then set up the conditions and structures in your life to prevent that from happening. So
absolutely.
To prevent you from doing that, you just shift your perspective from how can I solve it to what question can I ask so they can solve it?
That's right.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And can I make just one more guess that potentially your problem-solving nature gets you in trouble with your wife sometimes?
Oh, sure. She doesn't want the problem solved.
Exactly. That happens with me quite often. She's like, can't you just listen to me instead of trying to fix everything immediately when I tell you something I'm frustrated about?
Yep.
I love you, honey, if you're listening. Well, Tyler, this has been really great. I love some of the insight and points you made here. Sorry for going over on time, but I liked learning about your day and seeing how you structure that, how you plan every little thing out, even your small conversations to have in the car. If something strikes you as inspirational, someone you need to call, someone you need to visit, you get that on your calendar and get it out of your head. Also, it was interesting learning about your dad and just him raising you on the hard work principle. That is really the definition of leverage. How can you get better results with less time? I mean, that's, and being raised with that perspective, I think is probably what led you to a lot of just the paradigm that you have when you look at things. How can you not only get it done in less time, but do a better job? And then also those insights about, you know, how you don't always do everything right. You hired too early and you violated the own processes that you set up, and it made it so you had to fire someone on the first day. So lesson learned there. And really interesting to hear your faith-based question. What was that question again that you asked in your interview?
So we just tell them, hey, we're openly a faith-based organization. How do you feel about that?
And then what was the follow-up?
The follow-up is something along the lines of, what does operating with faith mean to you?
Yes. Yeah, I love that, because that is very open-ended. You know, I think whether you are religious or not, you must have faith in something, whether it's just yourself or a higher power or, you know, something that will get you through tough times. But I think that's an interesting litmus test to challenge, you know, people's just how they think about things to see if they're a good fit with your organization. So this has been really fantastic. Thanks a lot for joining us. Where can people go to find more about you? I know they should go back and listen to the first episode, but where else can they go to find out about you and your company, Box Out Marketing, and what you can do for your clients?
Yeah, best thing is just go to boxoutmarketing.com. If you're using Infusionsoft and you'd like some help, you can just click on the request a consultation button. If you're interested in our workshops, you can go to boxoutmarketing.com/CCL workshop. Stands for Complete Customer Lifecycle. So CCL workshop. So boxoutmarketing.com/CCL workshop. You can request information about the workshops there. We've got two that are upcoming right away, and we're planning on putting a couple more on the calendar in the future as well. So we'd love to have you there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And if you're listening, I can't recommend Tyler's services and marketing insight enough. Tyler, thanks for taking the time here. It was great to talk to you.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening today. Before you go, I want to leave you with three important questions designed to get you results from what you just heard. Number one, what one lesson did you just learn that you can take action on? Two, what single action can you commit to doing in the next 24 hours to integrate this skill, habit, or mindset into your daily life? And three, what can you do to ensure you will actually take this action? Speed of implementation is the key to success, and you have got to take action on what you just learned. Perhaps you need to put a reminder in your calendar, put a post-it on your computer screen, or talk to an accountability partner to check in to make sure you did this. Whatever you do, make sure you take action on the one key thing you learned from this episode to make sure you start seeing results. You deserve the success and peace of mind that comes from building a profitable and influential business that truly matters. You deserve it. Your family deserves it. The world deserves the best business, products, and services you have to offer. The thing is, sometimes it's hard to take action on your own, which is exactly why we've created the Luminary Business Community at luminarybusiness.com. If you want to be part of this thriving community of entrepreneurs and executives committed to building profitable and influential businesses, head over there and sign up for our waiting list. As a member, you will get training, checklists, cheat sheets to grow your business fast. You'll get access to exclusive in-person events and meetups. You'll get expert coaching from me and other experts in the group, and feedback when you need it most. Fourth, you'll have access to a supportive community of like-minded entrepreneurs. Finally, if you liked what you heard on the show, please subscribe to the podcast, write a review on iTunes, or share a link to this episode with one of your friends. It will help them learn and will also spark conversations that could potentially lead to new business for you, which is what this entire show is about. Thanks for listening, and make it a great one.